Today's conversation is with Akbar Tobhani, the co-founder and CEO at SFox. SFox has raised $23 million making custody service a reality. They are a licensed entity in the state of Wyoming. We talked about how they've grown the business over the last 9 years of operation since 2014. They have a team of about 70 people, and we discussed their strategy of going regulatory approval first. They're one of only a few companies in the U.S. that have regulatory approval to do what they do, to operate the custody business. We talked about that in detail. We talked about the high-level crypto industry in the U.S. and what's necessary for successful flourishing of the industry and what's needed to be done going forward. This was a really important conversation. Akbar is running a really important business, and I hope you enjoy and learn. If you do, please give us a thumbs up or share wherever you listen to this podcast, and we'll have many more. Thank you. Okay, Akbar, I'm really excited to talk to you. Actually, this is our second cut. The first cut, I forgot to mention, I did an interview with SFox years ago. In fact, I have been running this podcast for 10 years. I started it in 2013. And I think it was roughly 2016 or 17, I did an in-person interview, which was the only one I've ever done. And it was in the SFox office in Southern California. And I just happened to meet your head of growth, and I came in and interviewed your partner. So it's awesome to come full circle and speak with you now. So appreciate your time. I'd love to first get into this and talk about your thoughts on crypto from a high level. You guys are US based. You take careful attention and diligence to being compliant with the regulatory bodies that oversee crypto. However, there often is a large frustration among founders in crypto in the US that there just isn't enough regulatory clarity. How have you navigated building a business over the last 10 years? You guys are roughly 70 people. Can you walk me through just the brief journey of where you guys have come from?
Mike, thank you so much for your time. I do remember the very first interview at CNET. I don't think I was in the office at the time, but we've come a long way from there. And a lot of what we started with was with this core belief that we have to be compliant. And that was like a day one requirement. So we actually waited for FinCEN to say, hey, here's how you're going to do compliance for the virtual currency industry before we started the company. And I think that came out around 2013 or so. And so we said, now that we have guidance, we know how to move forward in this space. And we've taken that stance throughout. And so what that's meant for us is that in terms of the opportunities we've gone after, we've been focused on making sure we only do things that we know are fully compliant. We have to not pursue certain opportunities in the market. And as the regulation evolves, it gives us more and more opportunities. I think I'll give an example. Wyoming, over the time, has figured out, okay, here's how we want to regulate crypto. And they take the time and effort to actually pass a law about 2 years ago on how to regulate crypto. And we worked with the Division of Banking there under the regulation, and we got our trust license. And that's allowed us to offer more services, again, within a regulated platform. And so that's an example of why we kind of focus on where can we get regulated, what's the path. And as the industry evolves, as the regulation evolves, we just get in better and better position in the market.
And have you seen the trend of the regulators being more open, more closed over the last few years? Do you feel like there's an explicit initiative or objective from regulators to banish crypto from the US? I mean, there's certainly the influence of like the exchange FTX's collapse. And I wonder, do you view that as an excuse for the government to ban cryptocurrencies? Or do you look at that as like an actual backlash? I mean, how do you sort of see it there? Because there's the obvious conflict of interest with the US dollar, right? The federal government controls, US federal government controls the world currency. And when Bitcoin or other currencies come around, it challenges that. They don't have control. So there's like an obvious conflict of interest. And I wonder, what are you seeing given your position?
Yeah, we do see the regulators kind of speeding up and slowing down, taking more interest or less interest in the market over the last 8 years. I've not heard of any kind of regulatory body coming out right saying they're trying to shut down crypto. I haven't heard that at all. But you know, what we do see is over time getting more clarity on here's how we want to regulate crypto. I think an example is CFTC kind of providing the clarity with Bitcoin. I think that was done about almost four or five years ago. And now they see coin. I think again, Wyoming is another example. And New York is, of course, another example that's also taken a stance of how they want to regulate the industry. So I do think that more and more regulators are learning about the space and providing regulation that they believe is appropriate for kind of their stakeholders. The FTX thing, I mean, look, it's however you put it, right? That was they call it fraud, they call it mistake, whatever you want to call it. The reality is it was really, really bad for the industry. And there kind of, perhaps there were signs before FTX that people should have looked at. It was an area that there are a lot of stuff they were doing that we do not offer because we just don't believe that that's kind of the right thing to do in the market. And so they're taking risks that perhaps they shouldn't have. And ultimately it does impact everyone, including the regulators. So since the FTX, you know, I do think that regulators are more involved, but I don't think that it has gone to the point where they're saying, yeah, let's shut down crypto.
Can you tell me a little bit more about New York, Wyoming, and the federal government? In particular, I'm interested to learn what is the CFTC's position on Bitcoin? How would you explain that to me and the listeners and New York?
I'm not a lawyer, first of all. So anything I say is really more my interpretation of what I've heard from the various legal folks. CFTC, I believe, has explicitly said Bitcoin is a commodity. So yeah, that's the first position there. With regards to Wyoming, Wyoming has a digital asset law, a virtual currency law, if you will, specifically designed for features of cryptocurrency. So they, for example, talk about staking and they talk about custody and other aspects of what do you do with the digital asset. New York was one of the first to start with the BIT license that essentially provided guidance from the regulators there on how they're going to govern the licensing regime for the citizens of New York.
And New York kind of has a reputation as being hard to operate in. Is that something you agree with? And Wyoming has a reputation, I think, of Wyoming, Texas, maybe Florida, as being the most pro-Bitcoin, pro-crypto generally states. Is that an accurate representation of the general trajectory of these states?
I think they all have their own requirements that they kind of put forth. We currently do not operate in New York. So we are currently operating in Wyoming. And to the extent that once we get our license in New York, we will operate in New York as well.
And do you see that as is that happening next month or is that not happening for 10 years? Are there other companies that have licenses in New York? Like, is New York thriving from a crypto standpoint? I would suspect the answer is no. And I suspect that the reason is they view it as a threat to their largest industry, which is Wall Street and the financial industry. Is there something else to it, or is it as simple as that, do you think?
There are companies that have license in New York. I think there were companies that were fairly large at the beginning when the application process came out, and then they were able to get those licenses, and I think that's great. I think recently they have had team changes, and I do think that sometimes with the resources that they have, they speed up or slow down the processes. We don't get a sense of any competitive aspect. I just think it's a matter of resources that they have to put towards various projects. And for us, we put our application where we're getting our application ready. And ultimately, when we're ready and New York is ready, we'll get our license and operate in New York.
Yeah. New York seems like a tricky place. Like why is Wyoming, for instance? Like, all right, let me ask you this. What do you think of the differentiation between states and federal regulatory bodies. So you interact with the federal FinCEN and you, like, what else? SEC. I'm sure there's other regulatory bodies. But then you're also working with the states. You worked with Wyoming. You're working, I sent the application in New York. I presume there's many other states that you're working with as well. What is the purpose of this multi-level regulatory system, and how does it affect things on the ground for you as an operator?
I think that's a reality for anyone in fintech in the US, because you do have rules both from the state and the federal government. There are certain exemptions and certain processes that you can work with, but you do need to comply with both set of laws. So I don't think that's unique to crypto per se. I think that's a reality of any fintech in the US. And we will continue. We'll continue to work with the regulators. But here's the interesting part, which is if you think about the banking laws for a second, you know, banks have very similar kind of state banking and federal banking. So it's not much different. But one of the things that banks were doing is that if you go put a deposit of money in your bank, what happens is they lend it out. I mean, it's just their business to take that money and lend it out. Well, if there's a mismatch between the bank's lending book and then the borrowing book, the deposits, that's when issues start. And this is true with just the model in banking. Now, the regulators have essentially lots of policies on how to manage that. But the reality is it's actually fairly hard to do. I mean, you saw what happened just the last few months with the multiple banks that had a mismatch in duration between the deposits and the lend. And they're lending it out to the US Treasury. They weren't taking unusual risk. But the reality is with the interest rate changes, they weren't able to manage that risk. And I think that's one of the things that I actually appreciate about the rules in Wyoming, for example, where they said, look, we can actually create a custody solution with the laws in Wyoming, where we can hold those coins in bailment. Right now, I'm getting into a little bit of details, but you know, since you're asking, I want to give you the full picture, which is what does that mean? So that means that when you put deposit money into the company, it's almost like dropping your car off to a valet. You're not giving them ownership. You're not saying go lend it out. You're saying just go park the car. And the same way, when you put a deposit money in custody under the Wyoming rules, we can hold that in bailment. We don't lend it out. We let you decide if you want to lend it out. We'll give you the technology, the tool to do whatever you want to do, but we don't do it on your behalf. And we think that that kind of progressive view is actually very helpful because, you know, unlike a bank where you lend it out, the whole business model is built around that. It's a lot risky. And you're dealing with crypto, which already has a lot of volatility and risk. So having a solution the way Wyoming put together has actually been a beneficial. And so what we're doing is creating that custody solution where you can hold the coins in bailment. And I think that's an example of how regulation actually helps move the industry forward. So I do think that there's a lot of work in various states, but I do think that slowly it does make the company and the product much better with the regulation that's actually thinking forward about how it should be covered.
And why would that require regulation? So I'm thinking about, like, if I go to a bank, they seem to bury the fact that they are going to take my money and loan it out in deep in the terms of service. When people put money into a bank, I bet most people think that this is 100% safe. They're not thinking like it's 98%, you know, that the bank is taking my money, lending it out, and like every once in a while it's going to be gone. Like, especially for company funds that were in SVB, the founders are thinking, oh, that's guaranteed. I bet if you did a survey, this is my anecdotal guess here, but if you did a survey to thousands of founders who had over $1 million in SVB, I would bet more than half thought that the money was actually in the bank. Like they would have thought that what you're describing with this bail setup, like that was the arrangement. If they were to say, hey, actually, most of it is being invested into treasury bonds, I don't know. Like, it just So why is this something that's not more common in the banking sector? What if I look around at the thousands of banks in the US, how many of them are charging me a monthly subscription to do bail to hold my money in custody? Probably, I don't know. Is there any? I've seen zero so far. And no, why is that?
The definition, right? The bank's business is to take deposits and lend money. So I think by definition, every bank is doing that. They have to. That's their whole business model is when you deposit money, they lend it out. And they have reserve requirements and other requirements from various regulatory bodies. But at the end of the day, that's kind of bank's business. I mean, you go to a bank for a loan and that loan money comes from someone else's deposit. So I think it's a business model that banks have. But the other business model of just holding things in custody wasn't possible. Like if you're building a financial institution, you want a regulator to say, yes, you can do that too. You can hold things in bailment.
Why does that have to be the bank's model? I'm picturing like if I use SVB or another bank and if I'm running a business, I have $1 million in the bank, I put maybe $1 million in the bail account and that's going to be just held in custody. Or maybe I put $800K in that and I put $200K in a slightly higher risk model where they lend it out to treasury bonds. And then maybe I put 2% in something that's higher risk. Like banks could just add the service on as like, oh, this is just another service offering. It doesn't seem instrumentally different to the business model of banks. Banks hold value, store value. Is there some regulatory reason that none of them offer that, like that custody service?
Yeah, I don't know why banks don't offer that. We do know, for example, that broker-dealers kind of offer that, right? If you want to invest directly in treasuries yourself, you go to a broker-dealer. You could go to the bank, but that's the indirect way of getting there, right? So there are other types of businesses like ours, right? There are custody companies even in the equity market. There are actually custodials that you can go to and say, hold my equity. And that's all they do. And they will work with DTCC to clear your transactions. But a lot of those have always been available to, I would say, high net worth individuals and institutions. They haven't been available to everyone. Now, with crypto is a mass market product. It's used by everyday users, retail users, but also institutions. And so it is an opportunity for us to say, hey, how can we offer some of these services that do exist in other markets to the crypto world? So we'll talk about this bailment for one more second, which is when you could go to a custody company and say, hold this in bailment. And there are companies out there that will give you that service, but they'll charge you for it because it's expensive, right? How else are you going to make money? One of the things we've done is we said, hey, for anyone that has asset of up to $250,000, we will offer that service for free. And the idea is that there'll be people that have more capital who will pay for the fee and they'll essentially subsidize those that don't have that much capital. So ultimately, the company can still afford to offer these services, but giving this custody solution that is available often to only large institutions, to everyone, is really what we kind of push for. And I think that rethinking of, hey, we've got a new asset class, how do we rethink the business model, is what we're excited by, right? We're excited by rethinking the business models to offer some of these services to everyone that we can.
When I first saw that 250 level, that freemium model, I first thought of the FDIC. So they have I think it's 250K, it might be 200, I forget off the top of my head. But they have an amount that if you put it into a bank, it's insured by the federal government. And I was thinking that you were doing the same thing. Can you explain more precisely what the trust company, so you have the Safe Trust Company, and this is a company that you started in Wyoming. And is this the operating company that you're using to hold custody for crypto specific funds for Wyoming residents? Or can you explain more who has access to this product and what the product does for people?
Yeah, let me explain what the product does. So it is offered by Safe Trust Company, which is a custody company that is approved by the, it's a trust business approved by the Division of Banking in Wyoming.
And did you start this company? This is a SFOX company?
It's an SFOX affiliate.
Okay.
And that's why the product is SFOX Safe, not too creative there. But it is an affiliate of SFOX. And the reason we did that is because it is a different business model. A bank's business model is you take that money and you lend it. Well, when you lend it, there is risk. And what happens when that something blows up? Well, that's why FDIC is needed, because you've taken that money and you've lent it. And if for some reason there is an issue on the lending side, the banks go bankrupt. And so therefore, FDIC has an insurance program to cover that. In our custody business, we do not lend it unless you choose to lend it. So you get the choice of lending the money or not. And so because of that, we don't necessarily need FDIC to offer that insurance. So what we've done is we've said, look, because we're not lending it, really the only thing we're doing is the way we can make money is to charge for it. So anyone that's less than $250,000, we charge for it. And then anyone above actually pays for the service.
Mm-hmm. And how's it going? So you guys have 70 people, you raise some money. Can you talk about the amount of customers you have or revenue or any other metrics you use to measure the progress of the company?
Yeah, you know, one of the big things is, I mean, I'll just give an example just this year. If I look at the number of customers we had in January, we look at business customers and institutional customers. That's kind of our focus, passing our focus. But we also have a lot of professionals and individuals who use our platform as well. But when I look at the business and the professionals, the number of customers we signed up in April compared to January, we grew 500% increase in number of customers we signed up. So in the middle of crypto winter, with everything going on, we're actually increasing the number of customers we signed. For a custody solution, we're doing the exact same thing. We used to have maybe a handful of customers. That increased 10x in terms of the number of people looking at the demos and so on. So it has picked up a lot. I think largely it's because it does actually solve a real problem for people. A lot of people, look, crypto is hard enough. And if we can make it easy, where you can get the benefits and the security that you need, but then you can also then do trading and everything else, that's what people are looking for. So I think that the combined platform that we provided is resonating with people. And so we are growing as a result of that.
Are you able to give any more specific numbers as to how many customers you guys are at or how much revenue the business is doing to put it in perspective?
Yeah, we'll make some public announcements on those as kind of we continue. But for the most part, right now, we look at kind of our growth rate and kind of how fast we're growing. Because really, what really matters right now is like how many people can we help, how many businesses can we help? And so that's really our focus. But because we're not retail, we don't kind of have the mass market where we don't do millions of users, right? We're looking at thousands of companies that we work with.
Mm-hmm. And can you put it in maybe a ballpark? Like, is it hundreds of institutions, dozens, hundreds, thousands of customers? And is it like $10 million revenue in the ones, tens, hundreds? Like, where, just give me a, I know you probably don't want to mention it for concern that the information will be used for competitors, I would imagine. But can you give me a ballpark?
Yeah, I mean, we do speak with investors. And so I think it's always good for us to just focus on like that kind of information with investors. So from the business accounts perspective, right, I would say we're more than in the thousands, right? Like four or five digits. So that's kind of what our focus is. Let's say five digits, yeah.
Awesome. And how many other providers are offering something like this? And I think of the primary value proposition as you are tied to or regulated by the state of Wyoming. So, and that gives people a lot of trust. Is that correct? So if you didn't have that regulatory approval or embedded integration with the state of Wyoming, then the value proposition would be maybe untenable for people from an institutional level. How many other companies are in this ballpark? Like, are we talking Coinbase, Gemini, I don't know, like a dozen, right? Or less? It can't be many, right?
No, I think if you, not all of these companies are equal, but if you just look at the number of custody companies, we're probably in the US, we're looking at about five or so. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we're looking at that many. If you look at the number of pure play digital asset companies out of Wyoming, there's only one, and that's us. And so it is something that we are kind of happy about, that we've actually been able to think forward and get there. But there aren't that many custody companies in the U.S.
And where do you go from here? Do you look at this as a land grab and say, okay, we're going to take what works in Wyoming and then go to Florida, Texas, maybe the more pro crypto states first and try to gain ground in that way? Or are you thinking about it from another angle?
We certainly will work with other states as well. So we already have plans on working with multiple states and building kind of this infrastructure in as many states as we can. So certainly that is part of the plan. But I also don't think of this as, you know, so look, I was with Airbnb before. So the word land grab has a very different meaning, because at Airbnb, we scaled and grew that company extremely fast. One thing in the financial world is that we want to move really fast, but we don't want to break things. So I think that's very important, that in the world of finance, that you move fast, but you can also be very methodical. And that'll continue to be the ethos of this company, is to make sure that we can take one step at a time, but take one giant step every time we take the step.
Yeah. Akbar, I look at what you guys are doing and the other five companies that are doing something similar as the beacons of hope in many ways for the crypto industry. When you mention your growth rate, I think of not SFOX's growth rate, but I think of the growth rate of the industry, because you guys largely reflect something much larger than what you're working on as a company. And so when I speak with you and I look at the progress you made, I'm frankly most interested in it as a signal for the direction of our country. And I think it's one of the most important things for the trajectory of our country to have a proper alignment towards the adoption of crypto. And if we don't, where would this country be if we banned the internet and we just said, hey, we're going to let other countries build first. We're not going to let that happen here. Like, the top five companies in the S&P attribute to half of the growth. Like, we would be a static economy. We wouldn't be growing if it wasn't for the internet technology companies. And I fear that we have this disposition in this country of like pushing crypto development outside the country. And I look at what happened in psychedelic medicine, and I think maybe the reason why we have an absolute mental health crisis in this country is because we didn't allow psychedelic medicine to flourish in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000s. And we're just now integrating it back into society legally. And I fear that the same thing may happen in crypto, that there may be this like generational ban where it's like, okay, for the next 30 years, we're not going to allow development, and it just collects dust. And we're at this really important tipping point where it could go either way at this point. You're starting to see states come out with policies. Florida and Texas, I think Wyoming, have had very specific regulatory or legal bills pass that recognize the sanctity of Bitcoin. What should we be thinking about as a collective for preserving the right to trade and build and innovate in this space? Like, what should we be doing either individually or collectively to ensure that that crypto adoption happens in the United States?
Yeah, and it's very well said. I mean, think about the internet for a second. Back in the 90s, and dating myself, but back in the 90s, I think there's a video that circulates about Bill Gates kind of being with David Letterman. But they're talking about, what can you do with the internet? And they're like, oh, you can have your own web page. And in some ways, we all have our own web pages, but we don't really market our web pages. The internet has gone in a very different way. I mean, if back then you couldn't think that, hey, you're going to actually have a internet on your phone and you're going to be able to call Uber and Lyft and get your car served. It's like that idea of being able to do that just wasn't there. And had we stopped the internet at that time, frankly, right, we wouldn't have any of the mobile phone growth that we've seen since then. I think crypto is in the same bucket. There is, we're talking about Bitcoin perhaps and Ethereum and some of the more fundamental and basics. But the reality is that over the next 20, 30 years, a lot of how we do finance will move to blockchain. I mean, that technology-wise, it's proven that it is the technology that's enabling transfer of asset between two different parties that don't know each other. And as we kind of develop the compliance programs around it, and as we develop the security around it, it is clear that the technology-wise, this is the direction where the world is heading. So stopping that today, I think, would be, we would essentially be in the dark ages in the financial world and in the blockchain world, while other countries continue to innovate. So no, I don't think that slowing down the innovation in the space is the right path. But at the same time, I do believe that having a sensible regulation around making sure that systems are built in a secure and a compliant way, in making sure that systems are, the businesses are built in a way that's actually beneficial, I do think that's needed. The example that I like to think about is what happened in the equity market. If you look at the equity market, there is this concept called self-regulatory organizations, or SROs. New York Stock Exchange is governed by an SRO, right? So there are SROs in the equity market, which essentially make sure that they develop something that is compliant, but also has the safety and security needed to build that kind of platform. I think similar is needed in the crypto space. So I think we've taken the first step of saying, look, we will be the good corporate citizens, but we're going to make sure we build something that is safe and secure for our customers. I think other companies will do the same. And I think if the companies were to create these SROs and actually develop that as an industry, I do think a lot of the regulators will feel a lot more comfortable. And I think that's what's needed. I think what's needed right now is creation of these self-regulatory organizations to make sure that we are governing and regulating ourselves, understanding the difficulty and the complexity that's offered in the crypto industry. And so long as we can do that and we can work with the regulators in developing a system that helps them kind of manage their obligations as well, I do think the future of this country is bright. And together, I think we can develop something that 30 years from now, we'll look back and say, oh, do you remember the time when we used to actually have to send checks, or when we traded stocks, like you could only be on one broker dealer? I think a lot of that will change, and you know, it only happens one step at a time.
And if you were to give us a grade, if you give the country a grade for its performance on adoption, not the industry, I'm not talking about FTX's collapse and any of that, but if you give us a grade on like how well are we doing from a governmental integration and technology adoption perspective, what do you give us? Like you mentioned these SROs, is this happening or is this not happening? Are we on a good trajectory? Or do we need to really step it up?
It's a really good question. But I think before I put a score, I think there has to be context around like how we're thinking about this too. We do see markets across the globe. We do have an entity out of Singapore. We have a BVI entity, and we do work with other regulatory bodies in different parts of the world. So given that context, what we've seen is in many parts of the world, the ambiguity is actually even more and not less. Oftentimes, the government has gone back and forth. Sometimes crypto is allowed, sometimes it's not allowed. And that ambiguity has actually made it even more difficult because you invest it and then you have to pull out, and you have to invest again, and you pull out. So that's actually becoming even more difficult internationally. What I appreciate about the US system is that there are checks and balances. There are judicial systems, and so there are kind of multiple different institutions looking at crypto. I also think the clarity that FinCEN gave early on was actually really helpful. And I think that as we get more and more clarity, I do think that US tends to have a much better system to govern long-term. Right now, I do think that some of the agencies have not provided that clarity. So given that, I'd probably, on a scale of A to D, I'd probably give ourselves maybe a B or B minus. But I do think that compared to some of the other countries, and if there are some other countries where I'd probably give them C or D because of the crypto is hot today, not tomorrow kind of attitude, because that's actually worse. I mean, I'd rather get the clarity, but get it once so that companies can invest, company can develop, company can build the solutions, and not have to redo it every time the government changes their mind.
Interesting. So you seem, just in speaking with you, you seem to have a I'd call it cautiously optimistic trajectory over towards the US's regulatory performance so far. And certainly, I know that you want to be personally successful and successful in the business. So there's some degree of like, okay, we just this just has to work. But when I listen to the CEO of Coinbase talk, it gives me more concern. And it makes and the benefit of being a leader in a company like yours and sounding more of an alarm is that it calls attention to people who are on the sidelines, like myself, who I run a podcast, I invest in crypto, I'm like amateur-ish person. There's a lot of people in that, like this, the crypto Twitter sphere. And it's really an army. It's an army of people. And to align them and point them in a direction and say, this is what we have to do, and we have to do it now, it can become like a laser. And lasers are much more powerful than flashlights. I'm trying to encourage people I talk to that, hey, if we're really headed towards the iceberg, like we need to pull a hard freaking left. And like we need to do something, whether that's come to an organization, we all put in money. Like what if everyone put in 1% of their crypto holdings and together there was like a lobbying group that then went out and tried to like make specific things happen? I don't know. I don't know if that's the answer. You mentioned these SROs. Like how do we do this 10 times better, 10 times faster? And like, I would love for you to tell me, hey, Mike, I think there's a 95% chance that US is the absolute world leader in crypto innovation over the next 10 years, instead of like B minus, maybe sliding downward. Do you feel like there's enough momentum, enough focus energy in the industry that is pointed towards the direction of lobbying government and making the changes necessary? And if not, what should we do specifically to address that concern? Because that to me feels like, I'm sorry to spend so much time on this. I know there's so much to talk about, but this just feels like such an important thing to get right. Because if we don't, then every project is just RIP. But
yeah, I'm torn in some ways, because the complexity of crypto is significant and known, right? Like, I mean, the lot of the technology innovation is still ongoing. And so having putting anyone on the spot to say, well, why don't we have rules or laws around it? You have to think about from that perspective too and say, well, how do we govern something that's evolving so fast? So I will still go back to the having the SRO kind of model, which is that people in the industry get together, create a self-regulatory organization, and we develop the set of standards that the industry will abide by and will work on. I do think that's probably the most efficient way of getting to that next level. There's also, obviously, right, the clarity from the regulators, and I don't think anyone's going to argue on that. But the reality is that is not in our control, at least as a company. I mean, that is something that we as citizens should talk to CFTC and SEC and other regulatory bodies, say, hey, please provide clarity to the industry. But in many ways, we as an industry also need to grow up and do our part. And that's what we're focused on, right? We're focused on what can we do? And what we can do is make sure that we take that right step, right? Make sure that we offer the bankruptcy protected custody. I mean, that's the fact that it wasn't there before, it kind of amazes me, right? That we should have had that on day one. And honestly, if we had thought of that on day one, we would have built it. But being able to build that kind of solutions where we're saying, look, we are going to be an industry that takes care of its customers, I think it's important. So I think that as a industry leaders, we should do what we can. But as a citizen, yeah, I think that reaching out to the appropriate regulatory bodies to provide that clarity will be very important.
And how about these SROs? Is there an SRO that you can point to that's like, this is the SRO for like trading, or like, do these things exist?
I think, I believe it's actually called the NYSC SRO. Like it's literally called, I can look it up, but there's actually a specific entity that governs that in the equity market.
But not for crypto.
Not for crypto. And I think that's something that we're going to start looking into and developing that coalition, so that we can do the same thing.
If I were to set up, just hypothetically speaking out loud, right? If we were to just set up a podcast with like, can we get like It doesn't have to be public. Like, we could do it privately, but we say, hey, let's get 10, like, let's, how do we kickstart this? We get 10 founders of venture funded, US based custody crypto companies together with the general ambition to create some sort of SRO. And we just throw an hour on the calendar, talk about how this might look with a Google Doc. Like, is that, would that be helpful? Or do you feel like we're past that point? Or like,
I think we should do it.
Yeah.
I don't think we're past that point. I think we should do it. And we should be, you know, championing and pioneering. Right?
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to hit you up afterwards about that.
Let's do it.
I know we're approaching our time. Akbar, you guys have raised a decent amount of money. You've made tremendous progress so far. Is there anything you wanted to talk about that we haven't talked about so far? We covered a lot of ground.
I know we covered kind of a lot on the regulatory side. Mm-hmm. But one of the big things that we're seeing in the market is that people love this idea of having access to the blockchain and blockchain services. And that the notion of and what does that mean, right? So look, there are so many things you can do with the blockchain, but it all starts from on-ramp and off-ramp, depositing money, trading, and then custody, right? Like, that becomes the foundation. And for us, unifying that and creating that seamless experience between all of those is what we're focused on. And I do think that ease that we can create for our customers, I think, becomes very important. Because for a lot of customers, the crypto is way too complex. I mean, we're talking about regulatory bodies. I'll tell you, I was at a conference earlier this week, and we were talking about things like, what's backing Bitcoin? So to grow the adoption of the space, I think that making this entire experience easier is actually what's needed. And that's kind of our focus area. And I think that's something that, if we talk again, maybe that's it. It's a good topic to kind of delve into, because right now crypto is really too cryptic for a lot of people. It is very hard and very confusing. And I think if we can govern and transition that to more of a digital assets that make it easier for you, I do think that the market is ready for that, and something that we should all be working towards.
Love it. Love it. Well, Akbar, thanks so much for hopping on today. Congrats on all the progress with everything. I hope you guys achieve wild success and pave the way for many other companies to follow. Are you active online, tweeting or blogging? Anything you wanted to shout out personally? We'll have all the links to the company in the show notes.
Yeah, I mean, look, sfox.com is where we are. On Twitter, it's sfox. And you know, that, I think that's the best place to get to us. If you're on Twitter and you message us, we'll get it for sure.
Awesome. Thanks so much for your time, and talk soon.
Thanks so much.